How can we engage the culture, especially in books, music, and movies, with charitable and critical discussion through a lens of faith and as a means of drawing ourselves and others closer to Jesus? I'm Ali LaVille.
And I'm Andy Norton. This is Though They Die, talking about the things of this world through the lens of eternity. Today we're discussing West Side Story. Welcome to the show.
All right. You know, I've never looked at the time as I say the intro.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, that took 10 or 11 seconds. And I was like, I had like a little existential moment of like, so that's what 11 seconds is, the intro to the podcast. Wow. I don't know why. It's the little things, man. It is.
Yeah.
Well, welcome.
Dude, here we are talking about West Side Story. And again, nice. Yes. The what did you say the other day? You were saying that's the
it's like the go-to reference for syncopation in a music theory class.
Syncopation.
Like, hey, do you want to see how to do a triplet? Like, this is how you do a triplet.
That's awesome. Yeah. I love it. Well, yet again, we're talking about a musical. And
yes, we are.
And yet again, Ali.
Wait, we've done a musical before?
Oh, haven't we? No, we have, kind of. We did, we talked about Big Fish, the movie, which also has a musical.
Which I brought in the musical stuff. I did it.
Exactly, but this one classic. Legitimately is just a musical. West Side Story
Straight
is a 1961 movie. It's also been a Broadway play.
Andy.
Wow.
Originally a production. The first production was 1957.
Also, that's funny.
Washington, D.C.
It was originally on Broadway, you're saying.
Well, so it started off in D.C.,
okay.
then Philadelphia, and then it went to Broadway, and then in 1958 went to the West End, and then 59 there was a U.S. tour. In 1960 there was a revival, 64 another revival, 74 West End revival, 80 a Broadway revival,
and in the midst of all that,
West End revival. So and then in 61 they came out with a movie adaptation of it, which is pretty impressive because that means in a matter of 4 years, people were like, make that
good.
A movie.
Yeah.
Make that a movie.
Yeah. And then now, last year, Steven Spielberg recreates it. Remakes it. They said they want, what was it? Reimagining is the phrase that they did indeed. The creators wanted to say. They wanted it because they were like, you can't remake perfection, is what they said. To their credit.
They
acknowledge the perfection of the original while also reimagining it. And anyway, so here we go. This is now available on Disney Plus, and so if you want to go watch it, you can watch it on Disney Plus. Mm-hmm. It's PG-13, I want to say, and for mature audiences, I would say. But
so, Andy, why are we talking about this?
Why are we talking about it? Just because it's the newest thing on the block, and
heck yeah.
So people are gonna click on our episode because it says West Side Story. That's the only reason we're talking about it. No, we're talking about it also because I mean, I think it's a fantastic musical, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the themes are really, really fascinating. Love and violence and and racial prejudice and loyalty and navigating fate or like destiny in a sense. Like do things have to go down a certain path? It's got a lot of really interesting themes. And so I think it's ripe for conversation about those themes.
Yeah.
And especially too, I mean, again, one of our big things we talk about is men, right? And like, as our experience as men.
We are men.
Yes. And so talking about, basically masculinity, how to live out our maleness. And, I think there's a ton of interesting themes in this movie in relation to that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really excited to talk about those. How about for you? What do you think?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, it's based, pretty closely off of Romeo and Juliet, right? I mean, it's definitely not a extreme departure from that material. It's very clearly inspired while maintaining the integrity of its own thing, I think. And so just seeing that goodness there already, like, I think it's a pretty well accepted thing that Romeo and Juliet is a classic piece of theater.
The Shakespeare.
That should be studied, by Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm.
And so I see a lot of good there. I think beyond that, too, because you've kind of mentioned the thematic value, I think also there's, as far as like a pursuit of excellence, there's great value there because it was the first real triple threat production as far as musicals go. It had dancing, and the dancing was like, we're dancing, kind of dancing.
Yeah.
And it had singing, and the singing was like, we are singing.
Yeah.
And then it had acting, and it was like, this is a meaty moment, right?
Wow,
that you really need to act well. And it incorporated all of those things, and people were singing and dancing at the same time and stuff, and it moved the plot along as well. It wasn't like a, let's take a break from the plot now to sing a song.
That's
it's
a
like,
good point.
It's no, integrated. It's moving the plot forward, actually. And if you miss the song, you would miss something.
Truth.
Whereas up to that point, and then even some afterwards, songs oftentimes were, you could walk out and not miss anything
on the plot kind of thing. For sure.
So I think there's excellence there, and then in the performances as well. That I want to look at, which is kind of, I would argue, more like a surface level thing to the more deep thematic elements that we want to talk about, but
for sure.
Just worth noting as well.
No, for sure. I think it's totally legit. Sweet. Well, cool. Let's cover the synopsis then. Pull this up.
Synopsis Andy coming at
like you mentioned, Romeo and Juliet. It's going to mention that. So it says, a musical in which a modern day Romeo and Juliet are involved in New York street gangs.
Mm.
On the harsh streets of the Upper West Side, two gangs battle for control of the turf. The situation becomes complicated when a gang member falls in love with a rival's sister. Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
Whack.
It's whack. Is that good synopsis? What do you think?
Yeah, honestly, I think that's... I've been around it so long that synopsis is like, wow, yeah, I guess for someone who has no idea like what it is.
Well,
and that's probably pretty rude on my part to assume everyone, I guess,
knows
West Side
Story. No, yeah, honestly,
which is rude, for
so
sure.
Rude. So rude.
So rude. Everyone say how rude.
Well,
how rude.
Well, actually, to get to that point, actually, let's also say, so totally. What's your experience with this is you are familiar with the movie. You also, of course, if anyone was doubting this, of course, Ali has been the lead in this musical.
I was
stage.
A sophomore in
He's
high school.
He's shaking his head
by
right
no means
now.
Like my finest work. Or
yeah,
anything.
But you were Tony.
I was Tony.
Tony.
Yeah, I played Tony.
Right?
Yeah. I played Tony. Yeah.
And
yeah.
I was not. I have not. But you know what? I actually was not very familiar with this until watching the reimagining this weekend. I thought I knew it better than I did, honestly. I was like, whoa. And so I actually had to go back and watch some scenes from the original.
Interesting.
But the original definitely, like as a kid, I definitely was in the room when the movie was playing.
Totally.
And it really impacted me way beyond what you, like, I don't know, in a weird way. Like, I absolutely remember that feeling of just the absolute tragedy when these gangs are fighting and people are dying for reasons that just feel so unnecessary and tragic.
Totally.
And so that like really stuck with me. That is deep in my bones and like
down and
down. Isn't that crazy? Like it really was impactful for me.
Yeah.
Even though apart from that, all I really knew before watching the new one was, the song America and Maria and, I could sing those things or sing a few lines from them. But it was good to have it kind of be brought back up for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a good reason for this movie to exist is it does bring it in for a new audience who may never have seen it.
Totally.
Or even for people like myself who had seen part of it as a kid, but had not really had a reason to go back and check it out. And
totally.
So, yeah.
Totally.
That's me.
Yeah. Right on. Yeah.
Sweet. Well, hey, how do you want to go about this? Like, what do you want to talk about first? It's wide open. I feel like there's so many ways to approach. Like you said,
there are so many ways.
It's a musical movie that's like, it's got amazing acting, dancing, singing. Uh-huh. And this, with the new one, it has been reimagined by Steven Spielberg, and so of course he brings his incredible directing to it. So there's so many different ways to approach this. Like, what do you want to talk about first? A character, a plot piece, a theme. What's on your heart?
I think let's go from the top and then work down deeper. So I would love to start just by acknowledging some of the differences between the original production.
Let's do this. Yeah,
and then this follow up. So they. When they say a reimagining, they really mean that. They did a lot. They did many things differently. And I struggled with that at times.
Yeah, no.
There
yes,
I said
honest,
it. There I
honest.
Said it. I think what I would love to make clear is that I think this is a great movie. I think it's a great piece of art.
Yeah.
There were times where I had to, I think I would have enjoyed it more if I told myself this wasn't West Side Story.
Mm.
Because there are many aspects that I at least felt were key to the story that they changed.
Ooh.
Most notably, the lack of silence. There is so much more dialogue in this production than in the original movie or even in the show.
Huh.
The use of silence is, and because there's just fewer lines. So in this movie, they're like, boom, boom, line, 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 and it's snappy and it's quick and it's coming at you fast.
Yeah.
Whereas previously, they used far less words to communicate the same thing.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily, because I, you know, that's one thing when it's, you're doing, you're like expositioning someone to death. You know, that's one thing, right? Yeah. They were not doing that. I did not feel like they were doing that. It just felt more specific, and there were more people around as well, right? You'll notice in the previous movie, they didn't utilize a big ensemble. The only characters you had were the ones you would have had in the show, really. Okay. And maybe with the exception of at the gym, maybe they threw in some more people to dance at the gym.
Yeah.
But other than that, it's really the only... But in this show, they're interacting with so many other random people. Like Tony, when he's singing Maria, has interactions with two non-named rando people. Hmm. A guy sweeping up the basketball court, and then a woman feeding birds. And in Something's Coming, he's interacting with Valentina, when normally that's just like a, you know, a soliloquy to himself kind of thing. So they added in all of these different interactions and more lines, and it made it, there was more sound happening and more action happening, I should say, or more, maybe more verbal action happening, I should say.
But less room to breathe.
Right, less room to breathe. Whereas previously, kind of the, there was an eerie quality to West Side Story for me because of the amount of silence and the lack of clarity at times, and how as an audience member I had to infer what was going on,
right,
more so than I did this time. This played out much more like a movie and much less like a musical.
Yeah.
So the where, what is it? It would be the Somewhere is traditionally sung by an ensemble woman named Consuelo. And it's danced by the company, and it's this big ballet sequence. Whereas this time, it was a montage that Valentina, Doc's wife, sung. That there's a difference to note. Doc isn't in the show. Instead, it's his wife, Valentina. Doc is dead, but she still owns Doc's drugstore.
Right, right.
And I thought that was nice. I don't think it was necessary at all. But I didn't feel like it was. They were just doing it for the sake of doing it. I thought it added something.
Interesting dynamic.
It was a different dynamic, and it was interesting. So I by no means felt like, oh, what the heck.
But
I will say it did throw me the amount of dialogue that they added in, especially considering it's now 2 hours and 38 minutes long.
Yeah.
And it was a long show as is kind of thing. So that was an interesting choice that threw me. I think, other than that, they have a lot, they switched some songs around.
Well, I wanted to go into
and all that stuff,
I think that's just such an interesting point you bring up. Cause I would never have thought about that. But you're so right, because that's a huge thing. So even like, when, I'm sure you'll talk about how else they switched up the song, but the song Cool, it had so much more just kind of going on, because it's not just the dialogue. It's also that you can make a song busier with the plot pieces or with whatever else is going on. That song's a very busy song. They're playing Keep Away with a Gun.
Right.
And it's very tense because, like, you don't know if the gun's going to go off and all this stuff. Like, it's very intense in the new one. In the old one, it was, like, that eerie quiet was in a lot of it. And they're trying to stay quiet and cool.
They're trying to
contain themselves because they're upset.
Yeah.
And I think that's so right. I wouldn't have named it, though. That was the difference that I like about the old version of Cool. Was that the eerie silence?
Good thing to note about Cool and G Officer Krupke, which are the two songs the Jets get. Originally, Cool is before the end of Act One, before the Rumble, and they're planning the Rumble, and they don't want people to find out about the Rumble, and so Cool is the song where they're like, "Come on, like let's just keep it under wraps, like we just got to get this done and get it over with."
Totally.
And then later they sing G Officer Krupke as they lament, you know, their upbringing kind of thing in a sort of sarcastic way.
Yeah.
But in the movie, G Officer Krupke comes before the Rumble and uses it for the same end. And then Cool comes after the Rumble. And so they're trying to contain the grief they now feel and the desire to let this ugly thing that they've witnessed into the light. And they're trying to contain that because they don't want the cops to get involved in all this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very different dynamic for Cool.
Yeah.
I liked G Officer Krupke, how that was in the new movie.
Yeah.
I think it was great. Like almost a perfect scene. But Cool is just so different. I think it is like one of those things you just be like, these are two different things.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can appreciate them for different reasons.
Yeah.
I prefer the old one because the new one actually has Tony in it too.
And I was kind of like, I found it so interesting because normally in the musical, the bulk of the singing is on Tony, Maria, Anita, and that's pretty much it. Riff gets to sing a bit,
right?
And then Action gets to sing a bit. But their Riff and Action singing is very like speak singing.
Yeah.
Which I will say I was pleased by when Riff first opened his mouth. I was like, oh wow, he's like speaks. Way to go, man. Way to like communicate without feeling the need to show off that you have a pretty voice kind of thing. I always really appreciate that when a character can do that well.
Especially since all these guys, like 11 of them, I think, did the Newsies before.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I was looking at the resumes.
They all have the singing. Yeah.
We know you can dance. Yeah. We know you can do it.
Yeah.
So, but the bulk is really on those main characters, and then the ensemble comes in for their parts as well, which are very difficult. Bernstein did not make this easy on anybody kind of thing.
Right.
And that's the beauty of it. So I even realized, like, in, what was it that I remembered? I think it was, I Feel Pretty maybe, or A Boy Like That, I Have a Love. You're singing the melody, Maria is singing the melody.
Yeah.
And then about a beat after her, the melody comes as well. So there's a temptation to just wait a beat and sing the melody with the orchestra, but it's actually written so that you're singing the melody ahead of the orchestra.
Whoa.
And so there's like little stuff like that. But they're doing, it's not a counter melody fully because it sounds an awful lot like the melody, but there's a few notes that are different here and there.
Right.
And so there's just little stuff like that where this show is hard. So that's worth acknowledging right now. This show is so hard to sing, especially for, I mean, you know, it's one thing if a Broadway guru gets in and it's like, I've been singing this since I was five or whatever. It's still a hard show. Sondheim and Bernstein wrote a bear of a musical.
And to that note, that's why it's really good. I would say that like I was more impressed with the singing in this movie than the Phantom of the Opera movie, the Les Mis movie.
Yeah,
like
credit.
I was impressed with the singing and the dancing, and it was,
I will say, my grievance with the singing is that everyone is so clearly tuned at different points. Like,
you mean auto-tuned?
Yeah, it's just the sound is so crisp and so forward and so bright. It's like, oh my gosh. No, human cannot sound like that. Straight up, you cannot naturally sound like that. And then it's to everybody, too, which I was more okay with, I suppose, because it's one thing if you tune one person and then it really sticks out. So like the Mary Poppins movie, Lin-Manuel Miranda is the most tuned out of anybody in that movie. And for me anyway, it just stuck out like a sore thumb. Yeah. I was like, oh my gosh, if the guy can't sing, get someone else to do it.
Totally.
This one, they tuned everybody. And I thought that was clear. And I was like, I honestly would prefer some wrong notes.
Sure.
I think like I would prefer some wrong notes. I'd prefer some more raspiness because I think that adds a really human element. And I don't want it to be like the original cast recording, right, on an album. If I want to listen to that, I'll go listen to that. Like, I'm here for a performance. So I had mixed feelings. I had clear feelings about that, that I wish they hadn't tuned it. Because, I think it does a disservice to someone like, who plays Maria? She was incredible. Oh, my gosh.
Just
amazing.
I forget her name. It's like her first movie. She was just a girl.
Rachel Zegler.
Shrek the Musical. And her friend.
Wait, what was she in Shrek?
She played Princess Fiona, like in her high school. But she, her friend texted her like the audition note and she was like, thank me when you're famous. And then, so then she went on to audition for it and it was like almost a year of strenuous steps to go from like 30,000 young women who applied for the role to her. Can you imagine? I just cannot even imagine. Yeah.
She did a phenomenal job.
Yeah,
I mean, really hats off to her.
Yeah.
Rachel killed it. And that's kind of why I get upset that they tuned her because I was like, this girl's voice is amazing. Yeah, like, sure. Oh my gosh, let it be.
Totally.
And you know, this is, you know, Ali in Minnesota at a, you know, working for a nonprofit's opinion, but like, yeah. So yeah, I think that was a thing. And then
interesting. Okay.
Cool. I was bummed out by, because I just love the choreography for Cool. And it's so iconic. And for me, it did not capture the same energy.
Yeah.
And I don't think they wanted it to, right? Because they switched it. But I'm so very attached.
What do you
so
think about America? What do you think about America?
So America, I couldn't enjoy.
It. Why?
Because I was singing the lyrics that I knew the whole time.
Oh, they changed
the lyrics a lot. Yeah. So normally it's just sung by the women.
Yeah.
And they're kind of, there's this back and forth. There's one woman that wants to go back. And Anita is, of course, like,
yeah,
what the heck are you going to do? Yeah. There, right? Like,
is it though? I want to say in the 1961 movie, I think the guys do sing in that.
They might.
I'm just popping in there.
I know in the Broadway they don't, but.
Because there is just a little bit of a, you're just too good, Ali. You have been in the musical version. That I can't believe you were always, literally any music we talk about, Ali's like, yeah, I was.
Oh, they are like,
very
it.
Humble.
They are
He's
in
like,
it.
Yeah, I was in it. Yeah.
They are in it. But I think it's still the same lyrics as the musical.
You're probably right. You're probably right. That's funny. I'm sure it's different. It definitely is different. But I loved it. The way that they spill out onto the street and like there's just this, it's so bright and colorful and alive. I really enjoyed that. I think America was done phenomenally. And the woman who plays Anita is incredible.
Oh, she did a wonderful job.
Deserves every accolade.
Which is hard to live up to because the original Anita is
amazing.
Good.
Yeah.
So good.
Okay,
yeah.
but it was hard for you just because it was different and all that. Yeah.
Yeah, the lyrics were very different. Because mm-hmm. I just watched a quick little clip to refresh my brain from the movie. In the movie, it's the same lyrics as the Broadway. The men just sing them instead of the women.
Okay, interesting.
This one, they changed a lot of things around. And so I actually wasn't able to pay attention because I kept thinking I knew what was happening
totally,
and I didn't.
Totally.
So that's not necessarily the movie's fault by any means, right? Like, that's me. That's on me.
Yeah.
So I think I need to go back and rewatch that scene and be like, I have no idea what's about to happen. As opposed to being like, oh, I'm so excited for the song. I know all the words.
Even without my familiarity with the original as much, it still took me watching it again to appreciate it so much. I totally affirm that. I think you should go back and rewatch that scene. It's the energy of it is insane.
I'll do.
It's really insane energy. Mm. Cool. What about other songs that like stood out to you as either like better, worse, different?
Yeah, I think
Tonight.
Yeah. I'm just looking over the list. G-Offers Krupke was awesome.
So awesome.
I was so pleased. I was like, yeah. This is the song. You did it. Good job, guys.
It had such strong Newsies vibes to me.
Which
it
is the point. Yeah, it's kind of the point. Exactly. Yeah. I love them putting them in the
police station.
Station there kind of thing.
It was cute.
I was like, that's
like
really
like when they're doing
well
like the court and stuff, like that's so
yeah,
fun.
It just worked
so
really well.
Yeah.
Such a good song. Such a good song.
That's great.
I thought that one was good. I was a little disappointed with A Boy Like That.
I don't remember that one. Which one's that?
That's Anita comes in and sees Tony leaving Maria's bedroom.
Oh, yeah.
So I only have one beef against it, and it's super, 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 super small. So normally, normally Anita comes in and can tell that Tony was there. I don't think she necessarily sees. I don't know. Probably
chances
there's
are
up
they
to
were more discreet about it in 61.
Right, up to interpretation. But sometimes she doesn't see Tony. She just sees the evidence of Tony. Sometimes she sees Tony. I think that's up to interpretation on the director's part. I don't remember what
would
the script
you do
says
if
exactly.
You were the director, what would you do?
I would have her not see Tony because I would think that if she saw Tony, she would run after him or be screaming out the window.
Yeah.
And since it's not written, just like I'm trying to think like in her mind, you know, this dude just killed her love.
Right.
I would think anyway, she'd be livid and would want to at least like land one punch on him or something kind of thing. I don't know that she would, in the movie, she kind of has this dignified, like shutting the window now kind of thing. And I'm,
It's a little bit too restrained.
Yeah, like, it seems a little like restrained. And that leads me to my one beef with the song. I think both women did a phenomenal job in the song. They had a kind of warm up to the song before she starts singing, just like some kind of not a crescendo, but just like a little like a chord, if you will, of a violin or something, to kind of like set the mood of the song.
Yeah.
And in I think originally, and I think in the 1961 as well, there is no warning at all. Anita sees the evidence, and then it's bum 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 bum. A boy like that.
Yeah.
And so it's like snap, and you feel the snap with the music as well.
Yeah.
And you don't need the warm up into it, because there is no warm up. Anita is unhinged. She cannot believe this. And so the whole like, I'm going to dignifiedly close this now, and we're going to kind of feel the music warm up, and then I'm going to get mad at you. Mm-hmm. Like, I was like, nah, it's not really how anger works either. Like, how many times do you warm up to anger? You know?
Yeah.
Like, it just kind of happens. And I think that's my one beef with it. I was, I think other than that, I mean, the song was phenomenal. I have two things I want to say, like from an acting.
Yes, do it.
Point.
I could talk about view. This. I could hear you talk and, about this all day.
And then I want to get into deeper themes and character
exactly.
stuff.
Yep. Yep.
I think, is it Ansel or Ansel? How do you say his name?
I think Ansel.
Ansel. Okay. Elhort. So Ansel.
Elgort.
Elgort. I think did a good job. I just want to preface with that because I'm going to criticize him. I think he did a good job.
I think he was. Okay, go ahead.
I think he did a good job. I think that he is a stiff guy, and I did not realize that until I saw him in a musical theater piece where you can't really be stiff.
No.
Like, if you're doing musical theater, you need to be operating from your core, and your breath has to be flowing to every single part of your body. And there were times where I was like, bro, loosen up. Like, I was like, let your shoulders down kind of thing. And it was hilarious. There's a few continuity errors, too, that I thought were funny. One was when he's first at the balcony, his shoulders are kind of up more, and then they cut away and his shoulders are down. And the next shot they cut to him, and another one, Chino, when he's in the boxing ring, it like someone grabs his shirt at one point before he kind of threatens with the gun. And so his shirt's messed up, and then they cut to another character. And then as he's walking away, his shirt is fine kind of thing or something like that. And I was like, I don't know. I feel like that's a big continuity error.
Yeah,
it was just kind of funny. It makes it human, though. I'm like, they did a lot of takes.
Yeah,
good
exactly,
for them.
Yeah.
But Ansel?
I think it's Ansel. I want to say.
Ansel sounds more proper or whatever. Ansel,
yeah.
Great job. He needs to let the breath drop in.
Yeah.
What do I mean when I say that? I mean, when you breathe as an actor, you have to breathe all the way to your heels and to the basement below you. The breath has to be totally moving you. If you are not allowing yourself to breathe, you're holding tension somewhere. And as an audience member, we see tension, and it indicates something for us. And usually, if you're an actor holding tension, you probably don't want to be communicating the tension all the time, right? So it's very common to like hold tension in the jaw. That's a big place to hold tension, and people aren't as free to communicate because they're holding tension in their jaw. You hold a lot of tension in your shoulders a lot of times, but then also your knees, right? Like how stiff are you standing, you know, straight legged with your knees locked kind of thing. And there was a few times where I was like, Ansel, bro, let the breath drop in, man. It's okay. Like you're doing great. You're doing great, bro. Like have confidence that you're doing well, you know? And so that said, I think for Maria, if he had let the breath drop in and been more free in that song, I would have been much more on board.
Yeah.
I was not super sold that this was the love of his life. And maybe that should be just because he's a little more stoic of an actor. He's not the most expressionful guy. And that's okay.
Yeah.
But I did want him to be freer as he acted. And I wanted to see more breath and more movement with a flexible but firm core. And I got some of it when he was dancing in Cool. But I was like, bro, we're almost all the way through the movie. Where was this?
at the
beginning kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, I love to see you moving like this. I want to see more, though. I want to see more movement that has the integrity of the character, but I want to see more. So, great example is Riff. Riff's physicality is incredible. Like,
so good.
Great. Dude did a phenomenal job. And I really bought into the character, bought everything happening there. That dynamic was interesting. They made that a much tenser friendship than it normally is, which I thought was an interesting choice. And I enjoyed it. It was different, and I was like, wow, this is really cool. But Ansel, I just wanted more breath.
I love that you described like in technical detail that very gracious critique of Ansel, because I honestly I don't think he did a bad job.
No,
I think everyone else did a phenomenal job
him. Yeah,
but
come on, Rachel,
stood out as kind of not doing as well as I hoped. And I think you're exactly right though that the problem with all that was not just like. Technically, there were difficulties, but like you just said, it made it a little difficult for me to totally believe that like that this is the, not just the love of his life, but like the first sight.
Right.
Love of his
and
life,
there's, and there's some directing things that I think they could have done a little bit better. Just one specific one when they're on the balcony, this is my final kind of acting-y thing.
Yeah.
When they're on the balcony and it's this, this is now the second time that they've ever seen each other. Second time they've ever touched each other. Right. Yeah. We remember the first time, and I've, I won't get into my grievances about the first time they interact with each other, which are minimal, but the second time they act, they interact with each other. They have this, like, you know, Spielberg loves shoving things in the frame.
Yeah.
I guess you've got the grate and they're looking at each other through the grate. He's like, I can't see you. He goes away. And then he comes in closer. And then eventually, of course, he does just climb up all the way on the balcony. I was like, why didn't you do that in the first place? But so that one thing there, I was like, I feel like they could have justified that better.
The grate is a metaphor. It's a metaphor.
Oh, right. Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course, sure. It is. I think they could have justified it more from a character perspective, because if he really does love her and want to be with her, why isn't he just hopping over the...
Because
he can, clearly.
Yeah.
So what took him so long, you know?
Yeah.
So I think, I don't know, I think they could have done a better job justifying it. It wasn't deplorable by any means. What I did find rash was when they finally do touch each other and he is up there, it's so fast. There's like no awareness of, oh my gosh, this is the love of my life and this is the second time I'm touching them. It was just all of a sudden like we've been dating for 6 months, you know?
Yeah.
And not in a believable way. Yeah. That's the kicker there. It's one thing if all of a sudden there's this touch and this interaction and we have an understanding as an audience member that it's like they've known each other forever kind of thing. That wasn't there. It was more, it more felt like, oh, choreography happening. Now we're going to do the choreography we were told to do, the blocking we were told to do. And I was like, oh no, like, this is the love of your life.
Yeah.
Like, you just met this person. You literally, like, how insane is it that you sang a song about her name and you ended up in her alley?
Yeah.
Like, how insane is that? And now you get to see, oh my, and she's there. Oh my gosh. And I can climb up there.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. And now I'm here. Oh my gosh. And now she's there. You know, like, this should just be like piling on intensity and emotion is there. And it's not like you're creating an emotion, right? Like, the circumstances lend themselves to the emotions.
Yeah.
You're not playing the emotion. No, just the very circumstances themselves are building and swelling inside of you. And for her, right? What are the chances that she's just hanging out outside and all of a sudden there he is.
Yeah.
There he is. And she says, go away. And he comes anyway. Oh my gosh, he's pursuing me. Wow, he came up anyway. He's not even scared of my big brother who's a boxer. You know, like, and then it's just like, oh, we're touching each other now. It's like, and I'm like, I don't believe it.
Yeah.
I don't believe you.
I agree with all this.
Those are my things. And that's like in shows with, I mean, usually in most shows, like, you have an intimacy coach. Or it, depending on the level of show, or your director will usually have some sort of intimacy coaching kind of thing, because it is a very, you know, that's a very vulnerable place to be with another human that you're not, you know, married to or even dating or whatever kind of thing. And so there's a coach there to kind of help through that, make sure everyone's feeling safe and, you know, secure and all that stuff. And also to make sure, like, the touch is, believable, right? Like, so if I hold my little sister's hand, that looks different than if I hold my girlfriend's hand.
Yeah.
And that looks different than if I hold my dad's hand, right? And that looks different than if I'm giving the sign of peace at mass to a total stranger, you know? And as an actor, while our circumstances will inform us of what that needs to do to the rest of our body, right? That hand holding, how that should ripple through our body. Sometimes we don't really understand it because this isn't an actual person we're dating, right? We're the filter for the character. And so we're portraying that. And so I don't know if they had I'm sure they had an intimacy coach with the amount of different things going on. I would think so.
Yeah.
So I wonder if that was like a fight that the intimacy coach lost, or like if they were like, no, it's justified or whatever. I don't know.
That's so funny.
That was a thing. And I don't want to go on all day about this stuff.
No, that's amazing.
I could go
this is
scene
great
for scene.
Yeah.
With thoughts.
No,
but,
that's great.
But overall, I mean, beautifully well done. I think Bernardo was just phenomenal.
He did a
great job.
He was great.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And his dancing was so masculine. I was like, yes, get it.
Yeah.
I think that's the best anybody's I've ever seen. I was like, way to shine.
Yeah.
I was so floored. I was like, that's a great performance. I believed every second of it.
Yeah.
And I think Valentina, that was so fun. I think she did a great job.
Yeah.
Brought some life to the character. Freaking Brian D'Arcy James.
As the officer.
Yeah. And then I'm pretty sure, like, I think that the guy who sells the gun to Riff and his partner. I'm pretty sure that must have been like a cameo or something.
Probably.
It just felt like it was, and I was like, I probably should know who this is.
I love how you know these people. That's so good. Well, I love that. Man, Ali, great work. Yeah, working through those things. And I think, I love hearing your expertise from having been in the musical and there's the old movie and now there's the new one. And I think that there's so much that can be like gained from looking at different interpretations and expressions of a story. You know, or a musical, and I think that's so awesome. So thanks for sharing that. Mm-hmm. Let's hit a few kind of themes, because again, there's so many themes in this. I love what you actually, just to touch on what you said though about the lack of silence. That's an interesting one that I think is interesting. It's worth talking about. It's not like a theme, but just to like before we get into the themes, just to circle back to that piece, silence. Immediately my mind jumps to the Mass and Adoration of the Blessed Sacrament, right? And like, what do you think the role of silence is there? And do you think it's similar in the fact of like a musical that doesn't give silence and room to breathe for the drama similar to the Mass? Or is that just a false comparison?
Yeah, I think that the role of silence is the still small voice, right? I mean, we have the Lord very clearly saying, you know, it wasn't in the rushing wind, it wasn't in the thundering earthquake, it wasn't in the fire, it was in a still, and then you heard a still small voice and he covered his head and came to the mouth of the cave, Elijah.
Yeah.
And I think that is I don't know if perpetual is the right word, but a consistent disposition that we need to have when we're listening to the Lord in everyday life and in prayer, right? And that's why adoration is silent. I mean, you'll have your Steubenville conferences or whatever when there's music and that sort of thing. But largely, adoration is a time to sit before the Lord in silence and listen for the still small voice. Mass similarly too. I know in the Novus Ordo, there's a lot of participation, right? We're saying a lot of words and stuff. But also there should be, I kind of love when the priest is taking a minute to clean the ciborium and the chalice and everything. I really appreciate that when that's an awkwardly long silence, because it's really some breathing room in the Mass, and really to be like, wow, okay, Jesus is literally inside of me right now. What now? You know, it's very, I think it echoes the great commission where it's like, okay, I mean, Adam and Eve fell. The Lord went about this plan of salvation. Jesus died for our sins and he rose from the dead. And now what are you going to do about it? You know?
Yeah.
I think, and in musicals and, straight plays and movies, the works, even albums, music albums, books is kind of hard. How do you communicate silence in a book? That's an interesting
question. Yeah, well, I don't know.
Authors out there, let us know. But in all of these, you know, visual and verbal mediums, we'll say, or visual and audio mediums, How do you reflect real life, right? How do you reflect the true good and the beautiful? And I'd argue if you don't have silence, you're not doing it.
Yeah.
I think the beauty of music is that it's a combination of noise and silence, right? That is what music is. There's sound and then a lack of sound, and that's how you make music. And then in straight plays, how often in life do we explain everything we're thinking? Pretty seldomly, actually. Like, we do that sometimes when we really need to process through something big. But by and large, our decisions are made inside our heads, and then we act. Then that moves us to locomotion or communication or whatever. And I think that is so essential to do in a play, because we have to see ourselves if the play or the musical is really going to affect us. We have to be able to see ourselves. That's the whole point. Mm-hmm. We have to be able to relate and resonate. And so the beauty, I think, of the original musical is that it isn't super lifelike at times, right? It kind of goes into this, you know, I don't know if hyper real, it's not hyper realism by any means. It's super not. Forget I said that. but this kind of, it has the dream sequence, the Somewhere ballet, but in some way, the whole thing is kind of like a dream because
it feels staged. And
you have this isolated set of characters, right?
Right.
And you only ever see these characters. And I think you could argue that, you know, Officer Krupke and Lieutenant Schrank are kind of, you know, outliers to this, and even Doc. So the three adults in the original piece are all kind of outliers to the dream sequence. But then the young people are all wrapped up in this kind of dream sequence. And there's no, like, none of them have parents. You never see any of their parents. You never see any of their aunts, their uncles, nothing. Yeah. It's just them. It's just the young people. And so we get kind of lulled into this. And as a result, there's a lot of time for pondering. I mean, Tony, when he's first walking away from the dance, and he's just like, Maria. There's just silence, right? Mm. He's just ruminating on his love. And then, too, in the... trying to think of another good example from the OG.
I mean,
Cool is probably a good, really good, really good example where there's like an uncomfortable lack of dialogue.
Totally. And go look that up on YouTube right now. Oh my gosh. If you've not seen it. Cool. The original.
So good.
1961.
Yeah.
West Side Story.
And I love the, so they finish the song and they everyone's got their kind of pow.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
And then they're just, it's just snapping.
Yes. Yes.
And the snapping happens like a pretty long time. Yeah. They close the door and then they look up at the camera. Yeah. And it's just it's pretty uncomfortable. It's pretty unsettling, and it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
And I think these moments of silence are opportunities to breathe.
Yeah.
And it's an opportunity practically for the actor to breathe, right? And get more, so a phrase that was thrown around in school was get more in your body. So sometimes like if we're really thinking a lot about something, we're not really in our body because we're so in our head thinking about whatever the thing is that we'll sometimes lose track of what exactly our body's doing.
Right.
And then when you get back in your body, like you'll be like, oh, my shoulders are really high. Mm-hmm. You know, like I can kind of relax there. Or, you know, there's little stuff that'll happen like that. So moments of silence are opportunities for the actor to be like, okay, let me get back into where my feet are, you know?
Yeah.
But also it's an opportunity for the audience member to be like, to really take in what's happening.
Right.
Because when there's dialogue happening, we're just receiving the dialogue, receiving the dance, receiving the song. But when there's silence, we just get to, our eyes kind of open up a bit more, right? The lens gets wider.
Right.
And so to Mass and prayer, wow, this is a roundabout point. To Mass and prayer, I think when we have silence in adoration, our eyes are just opened up so much. Like all of a sudden, you know, we're focusing on the tiny host, right, in the monstrance. And in the silence, everything just gets so much bigger, right? Like our problems get so much smaller as we kind of fly up from our little place on the earth and kind of get to see some of the bigger picture, mm-hmm. right? Or even like our self-hate, it gets so much smaller as our Lord gets bigger before us, right? Or even our doubts about his plan for our life gets so much smaller as he becomes so much bigger before us. Sometimes we feel smaller as he gets bigger before us. But it's that invitation. He's like, no, like come to me kind of thing. And that's in the Mass, right? So when we have silence in the Mass, beautiful opportunity to enter in to greater prayer, right? It's, I mean, similar, like the Mass isn't a show, right? And I think probably previously with the Tridentine, right? It probably felt, I'm sure to some people, felt like a show because they weren't doing anything kind of thing. So maybe the more, you know, I'm sure there's some people in history that were like, yeah, I'm just coming here to watch and kind of thing. But I think the great opportunity, and I recommend everyone go to Tridentine Mass. Yes, and come on. If you haven't, just to experience it, right? Because it's a, you know, beautiful thing we're offered. The beauty is that in that one, you are totally silent, right? Yeah. Like for the whole time, you're just sitting there and it's not about you, right?
Right.
But also, it's all about you in a sense. And let me qualify that. What I mean when I say it's all about you is that what are you going to do about it? How are you going to let this experience, this silence, this call of the Lord in the sacrament affect you? So it's the Mass, right, is all about Jesus, right, and his sacrifice. But why did he do it for you?
Right.
What are you going to do about it? You know?
Right.
And so as we get to sit there in silence, and I'll just speak specifically in the Tridentine Mass where there's abundant, ample opportunity to reflect and pray and come to the Lord in silence. It's this push kind of thing. Like, what are you going to do about it? Like you have to act. You have to.
Right.
Even an inaction is an action. That's a choice. And it's a no. If you are moved to inaction, or you force yourself to inaction. So I think something to look at then in this show is like, well, what are we called to, right? Like, what are we being moved to from this? And there's, you know, we talked about earlier, there's deep themes of racial prejudice, right? That's very prevalent here. There is, I think even some ageist, you know, things where the young people are like, well, they don't know anything. They're older and they kind of get a Lord of the Flies, you know, we're young, we'll live forever sort of mentality. There's this love conquers all. And I think a beautiful, just really interesting is in One Hand, One Heart in the movie, Tony says, even death can't stop us. Now, what does he say? Even death won't part us now.
Mm-hmm.
And Maria says, only death will part us now. Mm. And then refrain, he says, I'm going to stop. It's a little dialogue. He says, I'm going to stop the rumble. And then they say, they both agree that death won't part us now, kind of thing. And it's this fool. That's such a silly idea, right? Like, even if you got married, death parts you, right? Till death do us part.
Right.
And so you have this idea that like love somehow, you know, washes away practicals, right?
Yeah.
Which is, you know, which is a hard, you know, because it's like, well, yeah, but no, right? Like love conquers all, 100%. Yes. No exceptions. But that doesn't therefore mean like you don't have to do anything about it, you know? So there's a few thematic things there. And so I think things to take away, like as far as racial prejudice goes, like, I mean, you know, they say at one point, it's not that they're Puerto Ricans, it's that they're on our turf kind of thing. I mean, think of all the other gangs we fought, the Egyptian kings, I think it was, and then a few others that they list, which I think is interesting because I think that makes it even more applicable for us because, yeah, like, what are the things I assume about people? Whoever that is. It could be your coworker sitting across from you kind of thing. Like, what are things I assume about them when they sit down? Like, if they do something particularly obnoxious or something I have to catch myself doing all the time is people at mass. Like, if I'm looking at, you know, someone who is, like, constantly pulling up their pants or something, I'm like, oh, my gosh, can this guy just get a belt? Like, come on. Which is a reasonable thing to say, right?
Yeah.
Because I'm like, dude, get a belt. But also, like, how do I love him in this moment? You know, like,
totally.
While I'm sitting here in mass, how do I love this person? Or even like,
well, I'm sorry, I will get a belt, Illy. I'm sorry.
He's wearing a belt.
I'm not the guy.
But like, you know, these little prejudices we have, where it's like, or even if someone walks in late, and I'm like, oh my gosh, really? You couldn't be here on time? Totally. And it's like, I have no idea where they're coming from. I have no idea.
Yeah.
Even if I think I do, I don't.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I might actually even know, okay, they came from their house, and I know that they, you know, just like forgot the time or whatever, and they were being lazy and stuff. Even if I do know all of those things, that gives me no right to all of a sudden, you know, act prejudicially against them. Like, I'm late for stuff all the time. I'm lazy for stuff, you know, like, So is that to look at in our lives? And then ageism, like young people. Yes, absolutely. Don't let, you know, if you're following the Lord and some old people are like, hey, you should, you know, I think the classic is like the father, what a waste thing where you have, you know, a young man that wants to enter the priesthood and then their grandmother is like, what a waste of a face, you know, or whatever kind of thing. Like that is absolutely a time to not listen to your grandmother, right? If you feel called to the priesthood, like, come on, do it, bro.
Yeah, yeah.
You got it. But there's also a tendency for us to be like, oh, the older people have just screwed up everything.
Yeah.
It's all their fault. We just need to fix it all and we're going to do it perfectly. And it's like, no, you're not.
Yeah.
No, you're not. Like, you can do better and you can strive to do better, but you are not going to do it perfectly either.
Yeah.
And you need to be gracious and accept the wisdom of old people. Like Valentina is the great example of that. Whereas Officer Krupke and Lieutenant Schrank are ones that are like, okay, I'm purely utilitarian, like pretty, just need this resolved. Valentina sees the person. And so while their mistake is being more harsh, her mistake is probably being too lenient, right? So we have kind of two pendulum swings there, and we want to find the virtuous middle. So looking at that in our own lives, right? And then to the final thing, which is love conquering all. Like, yeah, absolutely. But it's not human love that conquers all. It's Jesus's love that conquers all, which is interesting because it seems like Maria is trying to show Tony that in a sense, right? She's kneeling, praying before the stained glass, and she's like, hey, come on, get down here. It seems like she's cued into that reality, whether she could articulate that or not, I don't know. But Tony is not, because he's been so humanly lost that he encounters human goodness, human kindness, and he assumes that as the new salvation, right? He assumes that as the new salvation instead of that greater truth that there's a good and merciful father who has loved him throughout everything, right? Throughout him beating up this kid, which was an interesting choice that they made. That's a new thing as well. Tony's kind of convict backstory.
Yeah.
And then coming, you know, and coming back and all this stuff. He's ignorant to the reality of Jesus' love for him. And so when he comes to something that is close to it, right, or as close as he's ever experienced before, because we see that he doesn't have any family either, right? And he's grown up in a gang, which is the only family he's known. And the gang is not exactly peachy. He's totally bowled over kind of thing and enraptured by it. And he can't shake that, which is why he's led to just despair like no other at the end of the film when he learns falsely, but believes to be true that Maria is dead. And he's like, Gino, kill me too. And I think the beautiful thing is his resignation when he sees Maria and he's getting shot. Ansel, great job, bro. Gets shot once, and I love that he keeps running, because kind of faux pas in movies is that you get shot and you fall down. It's like, no, that's not really how that works.
Yeah.
Or you fall down dead instantly, right? And that's not how it works. So he gets shot, keeps running, gets shot again, and this time it's a little closer to the chest, and so he can't, it's like, you know, he kind of falls involuntarily, and he is like already in heaven, like looking at her kind of thing and taking her in, because he's aware, he's like, wow, I despaired. But here she is kind of thing. And I think something to take from that is that when we are despairing, let's turn to the Lord, right? He hears her coming and he turns to her. Let's turn to the Lord, right? And then even if we die, we're going to be so joyful when we die. He never once, right, after he got shot and was looking at her, was sad. You know, he was like, wow, what a gift. What a gift. And he says that. He's like, whether it's one day or, you know, a month or however long we get, it's going to be amazing. And it turns out it was only, you know, a few minutes.
Yeah.
But he was true. It was true what he said. He meant it. And yeah, so let's all die well. Like Tony in a way, but let's also not make the choices Tony made to die the way Tony died. You know what I'm saying? I'm kind of mixing it a little bit there. But those are my thoughts. I think I just talked for like 30 minutes.
No, that's beautiful. Thanks, Lily. And I think, and maybe just add one thing from my side too, is I love that you're getting into like the characters themselves and their motivations. I think one thing I kept getting caught up on was just the tragedy of the situation that they're in. And I just kept on thinking, like, how do they get out of this? How do they get out of their gang life, et cetera? And the thing is, like, it's not so different from just like, how do you solve the problems of young people today and young men today in America and in the world? And the thing I could think of was Saint John Bosco. If you know him and anything he did, he took a hopeless situation of just these, you know, young, idle, listless men in gang life and faithless and without parents and all this in Italy, and he gave his life for them, and he got down on their level, and he broke through all those barriers of prejudice and ageism and judgment and all of that, and showed them love, showed them love, and he knew that you can't get results by just punishing people. Mm-hmm. You need to love them, and like a loved young man is the only person who can then rise out of that and love others. And so that was his driving force, was to love them and lead them to the love of the Father, which that's the only thing that solves it. And so a great example of that was Saint Dominic Savio, who was one of the young men that he ministered to. And for him, he was all about frequent confession, frequent communion of our Lord. And said, you know, death but not sin. That was his motto. Death but not sin. Like, and he came to the love of the Father. And so I just was struck of like, gosh, how much do we need to go to the sacraments And not just go to the sacraments, but go to the generosity of the heart of Christ that's in the sacraments.
Yeah, yeah.
And let those actually be alive in us. Because how many people can, you know, go to Mass, you know, again, not to be ageist, but your old, you know, fogies going to Mass every day. And if you hear them talking afterwards at Coffee and Donuts, like, they could be very prejudicial in how they're talking, you know? Like, we need to come to the generous heart of God in the sacraments, and let the sacraments enliven our hearts, give us hearts that are just overflowing with love. Because there is so much prejudice that is killing the world today.
Yeah.
And so many people who are unloved and beaten down. And so it just made me just desire more and more to find the ways who are the people I need to be there for?
Yeah.
Like, where are the young men that I need to love and show them the love of the Father? How am I going or not going to the sacraments to be loved and take the heart of Christ into me? And that was definitely the inspiration that I had. And I'm so thankful to be a part of this ministry again, the privilege. I think I've said this before, but the privilege of being that person for someone else is really incomparable. To be there and be someone who helps lift a man or a generation out of that and into the love of God. So
it's totally humiliating.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But the despair and the hope, like you were talking about, like there is hope, and it's in the Father. So, yeah. Well, wow, gosh, I'm sure we could talk forever about this.
Yeah, this is the longest episode yet, easily.
Yes.
If you're still listening, you're a champ.
You're a champ.
You're a champ. And we love you.
Oh my gosh. Well, I'm so glad we got to talk about this, though. We hope you enjoyed listening to today's episode. Tune in next time when we cover the short story, A Good Man is Hard to Find, by Catholic author Flannery O'Connor.
Though They Die is sponsored by Net Ministries. To get in touch with Andy and Ali, email us at thoughtheydie@netusa.org. We love suggestions.
Yeah.
Give them to us.
And to get involved as a net missionary, go to netusa.org/apply and apply today. Thanks.
Peace, y'all.